The Aristotelian part is all of these individual forms changing as the entities which they inform, which they make to be what they are, change over the course of their lives. The individual forms, the forms of individual things changing in time, which Aristotle believed in, are reflections or expressions in physical terms of the timeless forms in the nous, okay, in the logos, as it comes to be characterized, in the thoughts of God. Everything that exists is a physical expression of one of the thoughts of God. In that way, Plotinus unifies the visions of Plato and Aristotle in a short-take version of it by saying Plato's right about what goes on upstairs with God and Aristotle's right about what goes downstairs in the world, and what goes on downstairs in the world is a reflection stemming from what goes upstairs with God. There's the trick. He also claims that the purpose of human life is to ascend from contemplation of the forms that we see in the world around us to contemplation of the forms as they exist in the nous, in the mind of God, and finally to a kind of union with to'on, the one itself, a flight of the alone, the individual soul, to the alone, the one. And it winds up in a kind of union, which is Plotinus's parallel to or version of the vision of the form of all forms, the form of the good, which Plato implies is what you need to have if you're going to give a good life. This is a philosophy, clearly, which is also a kind of a religion. And it was a religion of the most sophisticated and educated, a large number of them in any case, of, again, the pagan elite as the Roman Empire drove to its close. It was easy to attach other belief systems to this. You could say, Plato did say, that the visible analog of the one in the world is the sun. There was a lot of sun worship in late antiquity. Indeed, December 25th was celebrated empire-wide by Plotinus's death as the Natalis Invicti, the birthday of the invincible sun. When the empire became Christian, that celebration was taken over as the birthday of Jesus, and we still celebrate it to this very day as Christmas. If shepherds were tending flocks in the fields at night, as the Gospel of Luke tells us about the time of Jesus, I'm told that that suggests that the time was, in fact, spring, when Jesus was really born. We commemorate it, though. We commemorate Jesus' birth in this pagan context as the birth of light, the rebirth of light. The birthday of the Invictus takes place because it's very near the winter solstice when the sun begins, from an earthly perspective, to head back north. You could think of the one as manifested in Zeus, and people did. You could think that Zeus, the sun, they were all manifestations of the same thing, and people did. That's where late paganism tended to wind up. Now, next and final piece of the puzzle. In 354, a brilliant young man was born to an upper-lower-middle-class family in the town of Tagaste, in what's now Tunisia, in the Roman province of Africa. His devoutly Christian mother and his nominally Christian but really pagan father recognized his astonishing talent and scrimped and saved to get him the best possible education. He ultimately went off to school at Carthage, which was the metropolis of the area, became a teacher of rhetoric, a very successful teacher of rhetoric, and went on to the city where, functioning away from Rome at the moment, the imperial court of the Western Empire was being held, Milan, and became a teacher of rhetoric there.